You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
And welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of December 6th, 2016, and episode number 292. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. My goodness, 292. We're almost there. 300. I'm going to retire. Buy a yacht. Not really. Anyway, this week's news includes trail cameras in Kansas that were hoping to find a mountain lion, but they found something a little bit more terrifying. And you'll find out. That's the first story up tonight. It's so terrifying. We have to talk about it. You have to get out of the way first. So you might want to put the kids to bed early again. And a mountain lion in North Carolina. Maybe. That would be interesting. We'll also have the MUFON sighting statistics for November. That's pretty cool. It's not even a week in, and we're getting the stats. We'll see how I did on my predictions. We'll also talk about free gift-giving advice. And we'll continue to count down the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2016 tonight with number 8 and number 7. On the countdown. This week's news is brought to you by the Thomas Francis University. Thomas Francis University is a metaphysics school that offers online spiritually based bachelor's, master's, and PhD doctoral metaphysical degrees, as well as single standalone courses in related metaphysical and esoteric topics. Instructors are easily accessible and offer world-class customer service and instruction. TFU and other ICMH schools have hundreds of students and graduates in more than 50 countries worldwide. For more information on Thomas Francis University, please visit tfuniversity.org. And, well, what do we have here today? Well, Lauren Coleman, I mentioned this last week, he needs your help. The well-known writer and cryptozoologist has had a series of health setbacks lately, which includes 6 surgeries in the last 4 years. Things have, it's gotten a little tight financially for him. And Lauren's asking for financial help. And that's not easy for most of us to do. I mean, I know I can't ask for help. It's, I don't know. It's a guy thing, maybe. I don't know. But a GoFundMe page has been set up for Lauren. So you can donate to help cover some of his bills and help get him back to what he does best, writing and researching. And you can do that at GoFundMe.com/Lauren's-medical-fund. And, you know, it's the season of giving. It's what we do this time of the year. We help others that need help or that are less fortunate or whatever. So it's a good thing to help him out. I know last year I donated to the International Cryptozoology Society to help get that off the ground too. And I'm a founding member of that. So that's exciting as well. So I want to welcome everybody that's in the chat room. See, Jim Mallard from the Mallard Report is in the house tonight. Great little show. He's got TMR247.com. Check out the Mallard Report. He's a great guy. Great show host as well. We don't compete. I mean, we don't compete. We're not here to say I'm better than him or he's better than me. We're all in this same little boat together. We have a little bit of a different format anyway, so I can plug his show. It's my show. I can do what I want, I guess. Anyway. What else do we have? Cryptic Culture Magazine. I've mentioned that like a month in a row, but it's a good magazine because I'm in there. I have an article in there on the rise and fall of the Loveland Frog. Cryptic Culture Magazine, it's in its 4th edition in its first year. So it's a really good cryptozoology-based magazine. Lauren Coleman's had articles, Lyle Blackburn, a lot of other people in the know in cryptozoology. I'm very fortunate that they approached me and wanted to know if I was willing to put an article in there. And I did, and they accepted it. And it was the first story of this edition. So I'm a little excited about that. I'm pretty proud of that, actually. So check out Cryptid Culture Magazine, and you can kind of view a little bit of it for free online. But you can also buy a print edition and have on your coffee table at home. It looks beautiful. And it's got a lot of neat artwork. If you see the front cover of it, there's a lot of other artwork very similar to that inside that you're not going to see with the free preview of that as well. So you can find that at blurb.com. They're a kind of like a print-on-demand company, blurb.com. And then look for Cryptid Culture Magazine. I'll put the link in the chat room, and I'll also put that, if I remember, I'll put it in the social media as well. So there you have it. Well, that's just the picture, I guess. Well, oh well, you can find it. And the events listing from paranewsinsider.com, I finally updated it for 2017. I know we're still, it's December 6th. We're not even through the first week. I get it. I know. But we're looking forward to the next season for paranormal conferences and conventions, UFO events, as well as cryptozoological events as well. So if you're getting ready to plan your next season to go hang out at all these places and be one of those, I don't know, what do they have a name for that? Well, they do have a female name for that, but I won't mention that on the air. But groupie, I don't know, a paranormal groupie. You like to go to these things? I know I like to attend them. I like to speak at them as well, or meet people at some of these events. And hopefully I'll have, I think I've only on there for one or two next year so far. Well, we'll see. I'll be at a few next year. Probably not in November during the deer rut, but I'll be out there during the year. So you can check it out. And it's just the beginning. This is kind of usually early events, January, February, March, maybe up through June. They've already booked their locations. They've booked all their speakers. So their websites are up. They're ready to go. And some of these events just wrapped up. They might have just wrapped up last weekend or a couple of weeks ago, and they don't have the website changed over to 2017 yet. So I've not yet included those. But as new events that were already on the calendar for this year pick up for next year, I'll add those back in. But in the interim, I don't want to put like fake information up there or say coming soon kind of stuff. These are events that are already ready to go for 2017 that are here. And hopefully I'll also have a new crop of new events for 2017 in all the three aforementioned categories for 2017. It's an exciting time of the year. See what's coming up next year in the convention and conference scene. It's always a good time. Again, paranewsinsider.com, and click on the events tab at the top. And as always, if you have any information about any event and would like to hear it here, as well as see it on the website, let me know. insider@paranewsinsider.com, or contact me through the webpage at paranewsinsider.com and click on the contact, the about/contact link there. The easiest way to do that, to find that, is to, other than to see the link, is to follow my leg. It's right at the end of my leg there that hangs down and gets chopped off. I do have two legs, by the way. I don't really look that in real life. But anyway, that's what we got. We're going to jump in the news. What do you think? I'm excited. It's this time of the year, and I've mentioned this a few times, it does get a little slow. Between Thanksgiving and Christmas, things get a little bleak here in the paranormal world as far as new news is concerned. So that's why a couple of years ago, I decided to do the top 10 paranormal news countdown during this time of the year. And I had somebody shoot me an email. They said, hey, why are you doing the countdown like twice? You're going to do it over the course of 5 weeks, but then you said you're going to do it also on December 27th. Well, I'm going to give you the full stories through these first couple of episodes, the next three, I guess, and last week as well. I'll give you the full breakdown of each one of these stories. But as we get closer, when we do hit December 27th, which I've gotten permission, I'm going to go full 2 hours. Well, maybe not a full 2 hours. Maybe an hour and a half, 45. Well, we'll see. We'll see when we cross that bridge. But it'll be an extended show on December 27th to cover all this stuff again. But I'm not going to go into full detail on these stories. So if you want to hear the full pieces and parts of all these stories I'm going to cover for the top 10, you're going to have to listen to each one episode, or each episode individually. And I will do a little recap followed by the top two, number two and number one. But we got a few weeks to get there. And, you know, in the past, people have said, aren't you worried that like something is going to break out and be a huge story? Well, I wish it would. That would be great if somebody discovered Bigfoot or figured out what ghosts are, or a UFO were to land on the White House lawn or something like that. Would be fantastic, but odds are it's not going to happen. So that's why we go ahead and do the top 10 right now. And it's interesting tonight that both stories that are in the top 10 that I planned on talking about anyway, I didn't change them or anything, both of them have something that was released within the last 2 days that has to do with them. So I'm kind of excited about that as well. And one of them I spoiled today on Facebook. I put a story out there about Lauren Coleman's top list of unfortunate cryptozoology death for 2016. And we'll get to that in a minute. But first, I want to talk about some cryptid news that's been happening in the last week. And this one happens to be my favorite story of the week. I always have a favorite story. It's usually something zany and off the wall because, frankly, some of these stories, they're kind of like the same thing over and over again. But this one here, you don't see all the time. I can't remember the last time I've seen something this unique. And this is a story. This is something that I'm going to provide the link for you in the chat room live tonight. And then probably will be my leadoff thing for like probably tomorrow. But I urge you, check this link out and check out these pictures. It's hilarious. It's very, I shouldn't have given it away, but it's funny. You're going to like it. So again, my favorite story of the week comes from cryptozoology, and it comes from the files of the Gardner Police Department in Gardner, Kansas. Now, due to reports of mountain lions in the area, they decided to put up two trail cameras to see if they could catch an animal on camera. Kind of difficult to do. It's really difficult to assume that you know where an animal is going to go, especially a mountain lion. They're very, very smart, and they tend to avoid places that you think they would go. But anyway, I love the cats. I love big cats. I love mountain lions especially. I researched them quite a bit. One thing I want to see in the wild, it's on my bucket list to see one of these things. Anyway, as expected, these cameras picked up skunks and even a coyote back on November 24th, but unfortunately, so far, no mountain lions. So what's the big deal about this story? Well, on November 25th at 6:37 p.m., the camera placed on a rural road picked up what appears to be a person using a walker carrying a sharp object. Yeah, weird. This camera's out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you see a little like a dirt road. There's no street lights. It's kind of out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, I don't know exactly where it's at, but it appears to me that this isn't somewhere where some old guy with a walker is going to be walking on by in the middle of the night, or in the evening, I should say. So what was a guy or a person with a walker doing going by this camera, carrying a sharp object? It was weird. But a few minutes later, another person appeared looking as if they were wearing a gas mask and holding a bag. It gets a little weird. I'm not sure what to think of that. Well, a few minutes before all of this, there was a picture of what appeared to be a person in a ghillie suit stalking the camera. Now, a ghillie suit is, if you're not familiar with that, it's kind of what sharpshooters wear in the field when they're trying to get close to somebody. It's kind of camouflage, and it's just like all these string things, and it just is made to kind of distort the person a little bit to make it confusing to actually visually see them. So it's camouflage, but this is really weird looking. This person's kind of far away from the camera, and they look like they're stalking the camera. Weird. But anyway, you go back a couple of days prior to this. November 22nd is the timestamp on this picture. This is the weirdest part of this entire story. That's why I saved this for last. That's why we're going back in time. November 22nd, two people wearing gorilla costumes and another picture of a person wearing a werewolf costume. At least that's what it looks like to me. I don't know. I'm not sure what to think of it, but it's interesting. Obviously, people found this camera and decided to dress up and decided to have a little fun with these trail cams and my goodness, to go through all that to get dressed up and drive all the way out there and prance around in front of these cameras, that's pretty interesting. I mean, might not sound that funny, but when you see these pictures, it's hilarious to see this. And the Gardner Police Department then posted this on their Facebook page. They said, quote, "We would like to sincerely thank the persons responsible, as it made our day when we pulled up what we expected to be hundreds of pictures of coyotes, foxes, and raccoons. Thank you to the citizens who noticed the cameras. Your effort and sense of humor are greatly appreciated," unquote. That's good. I'm glad the police were a little lighthearted about it. And good thing that the mountain lion wasn't walking by at the time when people were dressed up as these characters, because I might have decided to chew on a leg or two. But anyway, personally, I would have loved to have seen the person's initial reaction of who was looking at these pictures, the first strange photograph they found, especially of like the werewolf or the gorilla, just to see the look on their face. I mean, wow, that would have been hilarious. But anyway, yeah, you kind of have to see the pictures. It doesn't do it justice to talk about it. So if you're not in the chat room, well, shame on you. You should be in the chat room. But if you're not, I get it. I get it. We all have things to do. You know, we're cooking dinner or watching Wheel of Fortune. I don't know what you're doing out there. Hopefully you're listening. If you're not listening live, then you're listening to this taped. And the link, like I said, I'll have that up on the Paranormal Insider Facebook page more than likely sometime Monday, probably Monday afternoon or such. And you can check those pictures out. So speaking of mountain lions, residents near the border of Durham and Chapel Hill, North Carolina, which is kind of north central of North Carolina. Now, they're on the lookout for a mountain lion of their own. That's a little bit further east. You know, North Carolina is right there on the ocean. But is that possible? Mountain lions aren't supposed to exist east of the Mississippi River. So that doesn't make sense. Why? What? What mountain lion? And that's kind of the debate here on this particular individual story. Experts are split on the matter, and it essentially boils down to what's very typically three possible explanations. First, a majority of sightings of mountain lions are misidentification. They're either a large house cat or even a bobcat or sometimes a coyote, and they kind of misjudge the size of these creatures. That's usually what happens here, especially for those of us on the East Coast, because we're not really used to seeing these in nature. I've seen quite a few of them in zoos, obviously, but I don't know. The average person might not remember that. Now, the second and third explanations center on it being a real mountain lion in the area, but one would be that it's an escaped pet or one released into the wild on purpose. And last but not least, it would be a lone wandering lion from the West, more than likely, as the Eastern cougar has been deemed extinct, except for the ones that exist in southern Florida. Now, wildlife biologist Jason Allen of the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission wasn't very confident, as he said chances were, quote, very slim to none, unquote, about the chances of a mountain lion in northern North Carolina. Now, some think this lion could be related to the rash of sightings in Tennessee over the last few years. I've mentioned those stories here on the Paranormal News Insider. I think most of it was late last year. But those cats were seen in the western part of the state and none so far in any other area. And it's thought that that's just one lone wandering cat, more than likely a male, looking for a female. You're not going to find it, more than likely, unless you break into a zoo. And hopefully tracks or a photo of this particular individual one will show up pretty soon. Or otherwise, I'm thinking misidentification, which is kind of where I'm leaning on this story anyway. I would say more than likely misidentification. But again, hopefully tracks or a photo. I love proving these people wrong when they say that mountain lions can never exist in the East again. You have the Mississippi River, you have this, you have that, you have cities. I say no way. I say some things that I can't say on radio, but I'm hopeful that the mountain lion will eventually come back to the East Coast, east of the Mississippi River, and reestablish itself. And I know a lot of people don't want that because they're scared of these things, and they're a little intimidated by them, or some of the governments especially don't want them here because that's going to take away from their money because, A, mountain lions will scare hunters from being in the woods. So less hunters equals less sales from goods. Here in Ohio, you get an additional tax on items that goes into that for hunting, on certain hunting items or fishing items. And then you also have the fact that they're going to kill deer. And deer are things where they sell deer tags, and hunters go out and then they collect the deer. So that's money also off the government. So I don't really think they're in favor of that. Me personally, I've been without my car for 30 days now because I hit a deer in Pennsylvania. So I'm all for it. Let them cull the herds. I think it's a good thing. It's called balance of nature. We need a little bit more of that. I think that's what the TV show Kardashians is for human beings. It's to level the playing field a little bit. Anyway, we're going to jump into UFO news for this week. And excited to have the MUFON sighting statistics for November. I'm really excited because normally, like last year or so, I couldn't get them. It was really hard to get them. I had to tag a few MUFON state representatives for the information, and it was kind of like pulling teeth. Because there for a while, Jan C. Harzan was sending out the emails, and I was getting it about the 15th of every month, which is fine. But then all of a sudden, it was just hard to get this information, even for a MUFON member like myself. But we're very fortunate to have Audrey Hamilton as a fan of the show and a chat room regular. And she's also a MUFON field investigator. She's done a lot of great work with MUFON and putting on an event last year. Up there in Erie, Pennsylvania. So I really appreciate her taking, I'm sure it's just like 5 seconds to forward me the email, but it means a lot, and I appreciate what Audrey does to help me out here. But first, my predictions for last month. Yeah, I guess that's turned into a big deal. I stuck my foot in my mouth once and said that I can predict this stuff, and I threw a number out there, and I thought, well, if I'm off, then I'll never mention it again, and we'll just kind of move on slowly, just kind of step away. But it's become, I don't know how many months I've been doing it now. Let's see. This will be my eighth set of predictions. I've done pretty good. I've had a couple that were pretty darn close. So mine for November, October wasn't that good. I was a little off a little bit. But my predictions for November were 597 worldwide sightings and 411 sightings here in the United States. That was my my predictions for last month, or for last month after, well, you get it, for November. So anyway, MUFON reported a grand total of 534 sightings. So yeah, I was a little off. I predicted 597. They turned in 534. So I was a little overly excited, I guess. And a little too positive with worldwide sightings. But 415 sightings came from the United States. 415. I predicted 411. That's within 1% if you do the math. That's pretty darn good. That's pretty close to my one of my best predictions. Now, the grand total is a bit off. But again, 1% of the U.S. total. And for the U.S. total, that's actually my closest guess to date. I was off by one with five reports in September for U.S. reports when I guessed 471, and it turned out to be 466. But my best total sighting was, August, where I guessed 695, and it turned out to be 696. That's pretty darn close. I mean, that's not guessing, folks. That's analyzing these numbers every month. That's where that comes from. Yeah, okay, whatever. Anyway, after the U.S. total of 415 sightings, the next closest country was United Kingdom with 36. Canada had 31. Australia had 7. India had 5. And the Russian Federation, Poland, and Portugal all turned in 3 reports each. And then 6 countries turning in 2 reports each. And then another 19 countries turning in 1 report each. Now, a lot of that's due to the fact that MUFON is U.S.-based. It's based here in the United States. And other countries have their own reporting agencies, or they have other people that report for them or investigate these sightings. And again, MUFON just doesn't have a presence in a lot of these other countries as far as researchers and investigators and media and stuff. It's just not present as much as it is here in the United States. So that's why you're not really seeing a lot of outstanding numbers in other countries, because trust me, this would be a lot bigger of a total worldwide sighting number if other countries were really involved in this. Even Mexico, I mean, this number would probably double easily. But again, these are sightings that are turned in pretty much based on the knowledge of MUFON existing, and people knowing that they can turn in a report here, and it may get investigated by somebody locally in a state. So again, it's kind of a narrow view of worldwide. I almost wish they wouldn't even talk about worldwide sightings until they really had their fingers involved in some of these countries, with like Australia, for example, or Canada, even Canada, which historically really isn't overly strong with UFO sightings anyway. United Kingdom, they're pretty close, but Mexico would be awesome for the amount of stuff that happens there, especially and then in South America as well. South America, some of them South American countries are phenomenal with UFO sightings. But anyway, getting a little ahead of myself here. And then it's just kind of it's difficult really to say, you know, what's what as far as these states are concerned. Anyway, where are we? I lost my place here. So we'll start talking about the states here, top states. And we know the top states, it's always California. And the reason for that is obviously California has the largest population. So if you have the largest population, you should have the largest number of reports. It's just kind of how it works out. Before I jump into those numbers, though, first, I want to let you know you're tuned into WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVRadio.com, and you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And be sure, if you're listening live, to continue. Hang out in the chat room after the show. You're going to have a little bit of a break to decompress. Fill up your wine glass, your beer glass. I don't know what else you're drinking out there. I prefer Mellow Yellow. And if you guys are interested in a contract, Mellow Yellow, Coca-Cola, I'm here. Anyway, be sure to tune in tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central. Frank Lee is back. Frank Lee is back with Paranormalities and Ponderings with his co-host, Donald Davis. Now, tonight, they're going to be talking Christmas ghost stories. That's always a good topic. It's always a good subject. Again, tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, Paranormalities and Ponderings radio show with host Frank Lee and co-host Donald Davis right here on WCJV Digital Broadcasting at WCJVRadio.com. It's good to have him back. I think he helps me out a little bit here. Good show. Miss Frank. Hope he's got a lot of good ghost stories. Ghost stories this time of the year, good stuff. Anyway, back to the MUFON sighting statistics for November. States, the top states, again, California. It should be no surprise. It's number one every month. 59 reports. Florida was second. Again, another state very high in the population. Top five with 32 reports. New York, again, also one of the top states in population. 25 reports. Pennsylvania, 22. Texas, 18. And I think really that's your that's your top five anyway in number of population. So those five should be in the top five. Arizona 17, Michigan 16, Tennessee and Ohio with 14 reports each. Wisconsin 13, Colorado 12, Missouri, Indiana, Illinois, and Minnesota all had 10 reports each. Kentucky, North Carolina, Virginia, and Washington State had 9 reports each, and 31 other states, including the District of Columbia, turned in 7 or less reports each. And no, it did not land on the White House lawn. I would be covering that story. And MUFON used to do the per capita sighting report. I don't know why they don't do the per capita, but I break it down for you because that's what I do. I like numbers, and I break it down per capita. Now, essentially, per capita is essentially generally how many sightings happen per 100,000 people. And that's what I do. I break it down for that. It's pretty rare to have anything over actually one person per 100,000 people. It's only happened once in the last few months. Back in August, Vermont had a per capita sighting of 1.12, but they only had a whopping 7 sightings. So one person out of 100,000 people saw a UFO. So this is percentages, essentially. And California, since California is the number one with the number of sightings with 59, they're also the number one with population. So the population number being so high kind of drowns out their per capita sighting number. So with 56, they only turned in a per capita of 0.152. That's like somebody's hand. It's not even a person there. Wyoming with a 0.342, much higher per capita sighting than California, almost double there. But they only had 2 reports. So that's how much the population really affects it. And that's why I like the per capita sighting breakdown, because it really shows you the difference from state to state. You know, it's great. It's overwhelming. California, 59 sightings. Whoa, that's great. But per capita, Wyoming squashed them. New Mexico had a 0.335 with 7 sightings. And Arizona with a 0.252 with 17 sightings. Wisconsin turned in a 0.225 per capita sighting with 13. And Colorado 0.224 with 12. Tennessee 0.213 with 14. And Kentucky with 0.203 with 9 reports. I would say this month's winner would be Arizona with 17 sightings and a per capita of 0.252. It's like a quarter of a person. So it's essentially one out of 400,000 people turned in a UFO report in Arizona, which is Arizona's had some interesting stuff going on there lately. So it's good news there. So that essentially is your November breakdown of the MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, sighting statistics for November. And again, thanks to MUFON field investigator Audrey Hamilton for helping me with these, getting this to my email box pretty much on the first day of the month, so I can break it down for you right here. Now, yes, almost forgot. What are my predictions for December? Well, I've already come up with that. My prediction for total worldwide sightings, you can go ahead and write this down, 491 for total worldwide sightings. And I'm going to go with 357 sightings for the United States. Put it in writing. There it is. Boom. And now we're going to get into the top. Well, no, hold on. Whoa. Still have other news here. No, hold on. Other news. Some gift giving advice here. Now, for just $54. You can be just like any of the last 6 U.S. presidents. $54. You can be like one of the last 6 U.S. presidents. Prince William or Princess Diana or countless other dignitaries and famous people. Well, how, you ask? Well, by getting a star named after you. A star in the sky, that is. That's right. For just $54 plus shipping and handling, the International Star Registry will name a star after you or a loved one. Now, this isn't a commercial. Because that's not all. Shoot on over to starregistration.com and get a binary star named after you for the cool price of just $99. Well, you want to name a star in a visible constellation? Well, we'll ship your certificate faster than you can say twinkle, twinkle for the affordable lifetime price of just $59.99. Taxes, fees, shipping, and handling not included. But wait, there's nameastar.com, nameastarlive.com, starregistry.org, and about a dozen or so other businesses that will allow you to pay to have a star named after you. Well, how is this possible? Well, it's really not. Despite this time of the year when more people register stars through these services than ever any other time of the year, you're not really getting what you think. The star is only recognized as named or belonging to you through these services and is unofficial to the rest of the world. Well, the galaxy, for that matter. The International Astronomical Union has the responsibility of naming celestial objects and traditionally does so with a series of alphanumeric designations, or in some cases with Latin, Greek, or Arabic names. So sorry, Johnny, but Polaris is already taken, and you can't name it after yourself. Now, Mark Necker, a amateur astronomer from southern Germany, has created a page where you can name a star for free. Yes, you can name a star for free. And you can find that at staracle.com, staracle, star A-C-L-E. And you can do it for free. You can name your star and download a certificate for free, as well as have a link to the page where one can view the star. Well, I'm not sure how long you could stare at it. I think it would kind of get a little boring, but that's neat anyway. So save yourself $60 this holiday season and don't pay astronomical prices to name a star when you can do it for free. And that's your free gift giving advice this week here on the Paranormal News Insider. I never understood that. I've always yelled at the TV every time I see those commercials and say the same thing. You can't name a star after yourself. It just doesn't work that way. So it's good to see a story out there that says that. Anyway, yes, top 10 paranormal news stories of 2016. I was going to cover some that didn't make the list, but I'm going to jump right in. I'm excited about this and excited that, well, I'm not excited, but happy that some of these stories, well, both of these stories tonight that I'm going to cover, number 8 and number 7, because I covered number 10 and number 9 last week, both have something that was in the news this week. It's really, really weird. I don't know what the odds are, but it's interesting. So number 8, I don't have a drum roll or anything like that. Number 8 of the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2016, one word, Petals. If you don't know what Petals is or who Petals is, well, he's that upright walking bear. And he was seen once again in June in Oak Park, New Jersey. And that's kind of where the story started this year for this guy, even though Petals was seen since 2014. So this has been an ongoing story. And that's another reason why it's in the top 10. He's never made the top 10 before. And sadly, unfortunately, there's a reason why he made the top 10. You probably know the story already, but this took place in Oak Park, New Jersey. The bear, now famously known as Petals, was seen in December of 2015, and locals wondered if he would ever be seen again. Now, the bear sustained injuries to both of its front paws and is missing one completely. So it's essentially relied on walking upright to get around. Now, this is a perfectly natural thing for bears to do. However, they typically only do it for short distances. Now, there was a public outcry to have the bear move to a sanctuary, namely the Orphaned Wildlife Center in Otisville, New York. Even a GoFundMe page was started that generated $28,000. However, officials stated that the bear would do better in its natural environment, and if its health deteriorated, they would step in. I think that's kind of code word for saying, let's let nature run its course. Now, on episode number 187 of the Paranormal News Insider, back on August 12th, 2014, I reported on the upright walking bear in Oak Park that was near a same neighborhood as what it was seen in June. Now, the original video had generated 2.7 million views. I don't know where it's at now. This was back when I did the story back in June. I'm sure it's over 3 million already. That's a lot of views for a little bear walking around on its hind paws. And this was a very big story back then. And it's generated a lot of stuff since then. And while there hasn't been an unusual amount of Bigfoot sightings reported in New York, these videos do tend to make us think of Bigfoot and upright walking bears are probably responsible for quite a few reports. And that follows a story that came out the following month in July, July 12th, from the Washington Post. The Washington Post decided to take on that task of deciding whether or not upright walking bears represented the many sightings of Bigfoots. Did I say Bigfoots? Bigfoot over the years. The Washington Post brought in what they referred to as two experts to comment on the bear misinterpretation angle. the first of the so-called experts, was the aptly named Matt Moneymaker. Matt Moneymaker is from the Finding Bigfoot television show, and he's also the leader of the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, which is one of the most popular of the Bigfoot-themed investigation groups. Now, Moneymaker felt that the upright walking bear does not explain Bigfoot sightings, not even a little bit. And the, it's usually a squatch, definitely a squatch when you're talking to Matt anyway. So he just didn't feel that it didn't even explain a fraction of these sightings. The second expert called for the article was Bigfoot researcher and co-editor for the Bigfoot Evidence website, Matt Knapp. Now, Knapp's logic is that people describe Bigfoot like Bigfoot and not like bears. Now, his thoughts are further mapped out by his view that since we are conditioned since birth to know what a bear looks like, that they are easily identified versus seeing a Bigfoot, which tends to confuse a witness. Personally, I think that's kind of like a straw man theory. Now, regardless, this argument is meaningless since the Patterson-Gimlin film, who hasn't seen that? I mean, I saw that growing up when I was a kid. Leonard Nimoy, In Search Of. I mean, it was right there in the beginning of the show. It's kind of hard to avoid that, especially if you're into the field at all. I mean, maybe you've never seen it. I don't know. But have you seen Harry and the Hendersons? Countless television commercials. You watch TV? Messing with Sasquatch? I mean, people have seen Bigfoot on TV. So we're not conditioned since birth. I don't know how many babies have to sit around and watch bears walk around, especially on their hind feet. But I think that argument's a little weak. But that was an interesting story that started a little bit of debate there in July. Then in October, sad news about Petals. October 10th through the 15th was New Jersey's black bear hunting season for bow and muzzle loaders. It was the first wave of two waves, and a total of 549 bears were reportedly taken by the New Jersey Division of Fish and Wildlife. And sadly, among them was the icon of this ongoing story covered here, Petals, the upright walking bear, which took internet by storm in 2014 when a YouTube video showed him walking upright through the housing development was confirmed to have been taken during that bear season. So he's no longer with us. It was sad. I mean, it's kind of rough to deal with. I mean, it was something that we followed for a long time. And I can't imagine how the local residents felt. And the residents offered, they raised money and offered to, they wanted this thing moved to be protected or to live out its life. I mean, it can't really be comfortable walking around like that. And kind of what was sick about this whole story, not that it was shot, but it was the person that shot it targeted this bear, wanted to find it. And that made a lot of people angry. And I don't know. The damage is done. It doesn't matter who did it. Unfortunately, the bear is no longer with us. And it does provide some closure for this bear. And it was more than likely suffering through this condition. Because while it is natural, it's normal for them to be able to walk on their hind legs, they shouldn't do it or really can't do it for prolonged distances, or they wouldn't have four legs. So we should set our emotions aside. I know I'm still kind of upset about it. When it comes to things like this, but we have to separate our emotions from stories. And I do think it's a bit unnerving that somebody would purposely go after this bear, kind of a little unmanly, if I can say so myself, to stalk an injured animal. But again, Petals was more than likely suffering and would quite possibly not have survived another winter. He looked skinny back in 2014 and didn't look all that much better last year, or I should say earlier this year. So, you know, he wasn't really getting the sustenance that he needed. And interestingly, today I saw a story from NBCPhiladelphia.com where it's pretty much the second phase of the bear hunting season, and the deer hunting season is beginning as well over there in New Jersey. NBC10's website said, New Jersey resumed state-regulated bear hunting in 2003 after a ban that lasted more than 30 years. Another hunt was held in 2005, and in 2010, the state instituted an annual hunt. The expanded six-day hunting season took effect this year. Hunters were allowed to use only bow and arrow during the first 3 days, and muzzle-loading guns were added during the second half. This coming week's hunt is for firearms only and runs concurrently with the six-day firearm season for deer. But wildlife officials anticipate the bear hunt will end early due to the harvest limit set in the state's bear management policy. And while many plan to protest, it should be realized that this is a necessary evil due to the booming bear population. Bear are out of control in New Jersey, in that part of the East. And it's really for the safety of the bear and the health of the bear to naturally cull them to get their numbers under control. But when, you know, it's again, it's hard to set our emotions aside when something like this, something like an icon gets caught up in this, caught up in the literal crossfire of all this stuff. And we tend to side with nature. But again, he was suffering. So why is the story on the list? You know, it was kind of like a flash in the pan, but again, June, July, and now here in December, June, July, October, and well, unfortunately, when he was killed, and now in December. So this story is still continuing to linger on. So today's story really had no factor in this being in the top 10, but now it kind of helps solidify it, in my opinion. It's a story I follow closely since it broke in 2014. Petals has become a beloved figure of the paranormal, even though many seemingly forgot about him for a little while. Now, sadly, while the story has began to generate interest, it was heartbreaking to hear of his death, although it does put closure to an animal that tore the public and private minds of wildlife animal protection and did bring an end to any misery Petals might have been dealing with through strain, injuries, or even malnutrition, which seemed apparent to me. So why is the story only number 8? Why can it be the number 1 story? Well, the story of Petals, sadly, did not generate worldwide outrage like the story of Harambe did, obviously due to not having a human connection. While it was popular in the paranormal, it still didn't seem to gain a tremendous amount of traction. Now, for me, I wanted this to be on the list since it was a story that had lingered for a couple of years and has now met an ending. So, again, unfortunately, Petals will never again be in the top 10, but I think he earned it. I think he earned his place. So that's your number 8 story of the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2016, as geared by myself, Brian D. Parsons, here on the Paranormal News Insider. I'm not saying that this is definitively the way the top 10 should be. Some people would argue. I get it. It's just my take on this. And my take as well on number 7. Yes, the number 7 story of the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2016 is urban legend claims a victim. You might not remember this story off the bat, but when I read this, you might. It might jar loose the memory. This happened earlier in the year. This is back from April. April 26th is when I read this story. It happened on April 23rd, so it might have been a while. And this was pretty much a one-shot deal. It just happened and it was over with. And it didn't really linger in the news at all. But I felt that this was a very kind of a big story, kind of a big deal. And it's a sad story out of Kentucky. Roquel Bain, 26, of Dayton, Ohio, was in Louisville, Kentucky with her boyfriend to take a tour of Waverly Hills Sanatorium over the weekend of April 23rd. While in the area, Bain decided to investigate a local urban legend of the Pope Lick Monster. The Pope Lick Monster, named for the Pope Lick Creek, is purportedly part man, part goat, and part sheep that is said to live under a train trestle that passes over the Pope Lick Creek. Of the many purported urban legends about this creature is one that states that it lures people out to the train trestle using hypnosis or voice mimicry to lead them to their death. Now, sadly, Bain and her boyfriend were out on the 772-foot-long train trestle when a Norfolk Southern train surprised the couple. They were unable to escape to the end of the trestle, although Bain's boyfriend was able to hang on to the side as the train passed through. However, she was unable to do so and was struck and fell 80 to 100 feet after being hit by the train. She was pronounced dead at the scene. As tragic as this is, it could have actually been avoided. A chain link fence and warning signs are up at the location to keep people away from the active trestle. According to CryptoNews.com, many investigators are under the impression that the trestle is abandoned based on the urban legend. A bit of research would have revealed that the tracks were not only used, but very active. And a bit of common sense could have kept them off the tracks, but all we can do really is use this as a lesson. I mean, we can't harp on them for their mistake. I mean, she unfortunately paid the ultimate price for that mistake. But we can use this as a lesson to not trespass and be aware of any danger associated with investigating this type of claim or any kind of claim. Again, thanks to CryptoNews.com and Lauren Coleman for the information for this story. So why is it on the list? Well, for somebody to be killed by an urban legend, seemingly just as the legend describes, that's pretty powerful. I mean, it's sad. Again, you know, I'm not making light of this story. It is very tragic and, you know, very shocking at the same time, but we should use this as a lesson and a warning. Trespassing is never a good idea. I mean, what else can you say about that? Why is this story only number 7? While it was a powerful story, it seemed to only flutter in the paranormal news for a very brief bit of time. Sadly, the lesson that Raquel Bain lost her life is just the latest in a long line of illegal activities perpetrated by paranormal investigators. The story's inclusion on the list is solidified, if nothing else, to serve as an ongoing beacon for others who will certainly be faced with decisions like this in the future. So keep that in mind. If you get the itch investigate something, to trespass, never a good idea. You never know what could happen. And this story, when it broke, people were talking about the girl here in Ohio, in Columbus. She was shot in the head for purportedly trespassing on private property. And I've studied that story very closely when it happened, watched the legal battle ensue, and it was very, very powerful things. A lot of stuff said on both sides. Well, ultimately, it was found out that she did not trespass, and the guy that shot her in the head disabled her, didn't kill her. She's still alive, still struggling with a bullet that passed through both lobes of her brain. She is surviving, and she's I mean, it's affected her way of life. So again, that's a part lesson to that. And that inspired me to this story here that I just covered about the Popelick monster. It inspired me to write a short story that appeared in a skeptical magazine about that very subject of this girl who was shot in the head. So that's your number 8 and number 7 story of the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2016. And we'll continue the countdown next week as we cover number 6 and number 5, we're getting there. And we'll also talk about some stories that didn't quite make the list as well. So might kind of ruin a little bit of some of the stuff that's out there. But a lot of stories this year, and we don't really have all but a few really big breakout stories. And I'm sure you know what those are. But nothing really super, super huge happened. More than a few times. So unfortunately, it's a little harder to pack a lot of stories in. And as we do the wrap-up show on December 27th, we're going to talk about top stories of the last few years. Now, I know last year I did the top 3 of since 2008. We're going to talk top 10 since 2010, essentially. I didn't do a top 10 in 2008 or 9, but we'll get more into that when we get to that show. Real quick, I want to mention the book of the week. The book of the week. And this is kind of people that know me or have heard me talk, this is kind of might drop your jaw here a little bit. But yeah, it was actually a good book. You know, I'm not a fan of the TV show, but this is based off of a TV show. Not a huge fan of this TV show. But I do respect these guys, and I respect what they've done for this field and what they have done for the most part on their TV show. And the book of the week is written by Jason Hawes, and it also includes a guy named Grant Wilson, with Michael Jan Friedman. The book is called Ghost Hunting: True Stories of Unexplained Phenomena from the Atlantic Paranormal Society. Yes, TAPS. That TAPS from Ghost Hunters. This was their first of two books that they published. This one was published back in October of 2007. I think I got this as a stocking stuffer back in 2007 for Christmas. And I kind of rolled my eyes and, you know, you get a gift like that. And she didn't know. She didn't know. My wife didn't know that I really did not like Ghost Hunters very much. Was not a fan of the show. I did keep I keep tabs on the show just to see what kind of ridiculous things they're doing or what kind of things they're coming up with or what kind of terminology they're throwing around, just so I kind of knew when I started to see that in the field. So I did kind of keep a watchful eye. But it's kind of brutal at times to watch this TV show. And as I mentioned, they did do a follow-up book. And I think they wrote – I think there's another one. I think there's a total of three. And then they did a couple of kids' books, which I have one of those as well. It's actually kind of entertaining. It eventually will be a book of the week here. But not yet. Not yet. This book is, let's see, 288 pages. It's actually not that bad. It's a lot of people have attacked it for being nothing more than just kind of a synopsis of stuff that was on TV. But to me, I've seen a couple of the episodes that are talked about in this book, actually on purpose, because I wanted to see how close they were. And it's the book actually adds a little bit better of a dimension of these stories than what you get on television. And for me, I enjoyed reading the book a little bit more than I actually enjoyed watching the TV show. That's just kind of how I am anyway. I'm not a big fan of TV shows the way they do stuff anyway. But books do provide a little bit more detail about things. And one of probably the most cringeworthy moments was when I first opened the book and I looked at the table of contents. And the first chapter, I think it was the second chapter. It's called The Scientific Approach by Jason Hawes. And I just kind of cringed. I was like, oh, gosh, I can't read that right now. I've got to put the book down. But I was pretty impressed by that chapter. It's only a couple of pages. But what they said and the way they went about it, to me, gave me confidence that these guys, despite what you see on TV, they know what they're doing and they do a good job. And I think the book, if more investigators that are in love with the show or think that the show provides them with the knowledge they need to be investigators would read this book, I think they would actually learn a little bit more just from this book of a synopsis of cases than they would watching an entire season of this television show. Also, if you read a lot of other books, but that's neither here nor there. So Ghost Hunting, True Stories of Unexplained Phenomena from the Atlantic Paranormal Society by Jason Hawes and Grant Wilson. And Michael Jan Friedman is your book of the week this week. Yes, I can't believe it. A TAPS book is the book of the week. Well, got to respect them for what they've done again. And this book is not that bad. It's actually really good. I really enjoyed it. And again, I didn't have high hopes for it. This was around the time where things were getting a little sketchy for these guys as far as what they were doing on TV. I think it was before the fishing line incident, but there was some other stuff that was put together that was very questionable. And people were starting to think that this is fake. Well, no kidding, it's fake. It's TV. How real do you think it really is? And that kind of began the debate, which is still existing to this day, and people are a little bit more skeptical about this stuff. But at that time, it was really kind of, I don't want to say untarnished, but this is before it all kind of hit the paranormal fan, more or less to say. But it's a good book, and I highly recommend it for people that are into the ghost field that, again, maybe are fans of the show that want a little bit, learn a little bit more about these guys and what they do and how they do it. So I highly recommend checking it out. Again, Ghost Hunting, True Stories of Unexplained Phenomena from the Atlantic Paranormal Society by Jason Hawes and Grant Wilson. And again, don't forget to check out the list of 2017 events at paranewsinsider.com. Click on the events tab at the top. Big thanks to everybody again for tuning in the chat room. I really appreciate you guys being in there. I know I don't spend a whole lot of time with you. I say that probably every week. One of these days I'm going to have to do just like a chat room show where you guys just kind of help me run the show. I don't know. What do you think? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe in January, things are a little slow. I'll let the chat room run the show. I think that's a good idea. We'll have to maybe put that in writing somewhere. Could be fun, could be disastrous, but that's the beauty of live radio. So again, thank you everyone for tuning in, whether live or through podcast. Keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, you know it, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
Listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.